this is Paul Vaughn, and you're on the fighting side of me here on WhiteResistanceRadio.com. Well, lots more news and views for our people. Of course, those are the European founding settler people of the Dominion of Canada, the United States of America, the Dominions of Australia, New Zealand, the Republic of South Africa, Rhodesia, and all of you who may be listening this morning in the European heartland. Well, this program, I'm going to be basically sending you out a speech that I gave, at least most of the speech I gave, in Vancouver on just last week on Wednesday night. This was a speech about the free speech battles that we're facing right here in the Dominion of Canada. And this is the talk I gave last Wednesday night last Wednesday night, the 20th, in Vancouver. And I want to thank the videographer Diane for having recorded this for me. And hope you enjoy it. Well, we are hoping that this will play for us. We do have our technical problems, don't we? We start off with looking at what happened to a Canadian icon, Don Cherry, at the hands of the politically correct, the cultural Marxists.
That belief, and this is a right, and it's worth fighting for. This occurs not only among the conspirators at the top, but unfortunately, at more or less the grassroots level. And I had a talk about this with Doug Christie's widow this morning in Victoria, and she came up with the idea that the generation that might now be in their 20s, their teens and 20s, what they want most of all is safety. I want to feel safe. I want to be in a nice warm cocoon. That speech, that thing he said, triggers me, it offends me, it upsets me. He's got to be shut up. That's her view, and there may be truth in it, I don't know. Unfortunately, as we will see, that's not just a youth thing. The repression, the effect of repression is actually coming right from the top by people pretty much in the age bracket of the people in this room today. So it's not, it can't totally be explained by an age thing. So maybe I should give the conclusion before I provide all the evidence, but the challenge we face is to convince enough people that free speech really is important and it's worth fighting for. What I find depressingly often in this country is the minute you are challenged and you become, in any way, upsetting or a nuisance to somebody else, your right to free speech goes out the window. Let me start with a relatively minor incident, but it involves me. In planning out this tour, I went to one of the hotels we frequently abused in Victoria, and that was the Best Western and Reliable in the community of Sydney. Now, I phoned up, and they're partway through taking down the order, the name and address, the usual stuff. And then suddenly, there was a hole in the conversation, and the person I was talking to said, oh, excuse me, ma'am. Along came the manager. First thing the manager says to me is, oh, I don't mean to upset you. I thought, why would I be upset with booking a room? Well, it turns out, we won't be doing business with you. Why is that? Well, our staff felt uneasy. There was an incident last time you were here. I was out there with Monica Schaefer in February. I thought to myself, incident, I paid my bill, I got on well with the people on the front desk, we had the odd little conversation about where's this or where's that, and I thought, incident. So I called one of the regulars who comes to the meetings there, and he's had a lot of experience with the law over the years, and I said, did anything happen? I told him what happened, and he said, no. And then we got thinking, Monica did an interview with the local paper there, the Sydney something or other, and I think she did it a day or two before the meeting, but because this paper, I believe, is a weekly, the article didn't come out until a day or two after we'd been at the meeting in Victoria. My guess is that what happened was that some member of the hotel staff saw the article and probably flipped out and said, that dancing woman stayed here, oh, I feel so vulnerable and endangered. I don't know. Now, the manager was to call me back the next day, that was 2 weeks ago, and explain what the incident was because she didn't know or didn't. And I said to her, you can't deny me a room under the Innkeepers Act or whatever it's called here in British Columbia. Oh, yes, we can. I'm in the process of looking into the legalities of that. But that was, because what I was doing is, I told the office under the floor, I went to sleep. And so basically, you're coming to my bedroom. Well, that wasn't exactly an invitation, but that's the thing. So technically, you can't deny me a bedroom unless I can't pay or overpay, say drunk or disorderly, throwing fists at people in the lobby. Yeah, under those circumstances. But you can't, otherwise, can you imagine if I'd been denied accommodation because I'm a native Indian? Oh, we just don't serve Indians in this place. Their business license is toast. They're run out of town on a rail. And Anyway, I thought, if my supposition is correct, it seemed that they didn't tell me, couldn't give me any explanation, and did agree that I, on previous visits, I'd always paid the bill, left the room in good order, you know, all those good things. I have to believe that somebody objected either to me or probably to Monica. So our staff is uneasy. Well, since when does staff get to have a veto over the operation? A friend of mine works in the grocery business. He stocks shelves in the vegetable department. Supposing he took a disliking to rutabaga. He tells the boss, I don't feel comfortable with rutabaga. He'd be told, you stock that shelf. We don't want to hear any more bullshit from you. You know, But when it's somebody else's right to free speech, or even the right to rent a hotel room, that's on the line. And I thought, what sort of people enforce this nonsense? I mean, they don't have any principles. And I can't even blame the person at the other end for being a foreigner. As far as I can tell from her accent, she was probably Canadian born. So she didn't get it. Talking about didn't get it, well, you know, it's all been all on the news, but 2 weeks ago, or just about 2 weeks ago, an icon in Canadian sports, Don Cherry, was fired after a 37-year career on Coach's Corner. And Don Cherry was a character. And he was paid to be a character. He was paid to be a bit outrageous. And over the years, his dress, you know, his flashy jackets that you would never wear in a public place. And his persona was that of the rough, gruff, old-fashioned hockey coach who appreciated old-fashioned hockey, where it wasn't considered a bad thing to occasionally throw a fist or something. And that was Don's personality. And it had brought tremendous audience to Hockey Night in Canada. Hockey Night in Canada, as far as I can understand, has a regular listenership of 1.2 million people. That's very significant in a subcountry this size. In the old days, let's say in the 50s and 60s, when there might be six TV channels, so two Canadian, and if you lived in a border community like here in Vancouver or in Toronto, you might get a few cross-border channels. That was your TV. It was possible for shows to have a big audience. Well, now with cable TV, and you could probably get 50, 100, a couple hundred maybe channels, there's so much choice. So to sort of capture as big an audience as Hockey Night in Canada did, it's really quite an achievement. And part of that achievement was a result of Don Cherry. A lot of people tuned in to Hockey Night in Canada just to see what Don Cherry would say or do. So he brought them a lot of traffic. So what did poor Don do that got him summarily cashiered? Well, in his commentary between the first and second period, he had a number of things to say. And that it's important to know, to remember that. He had a number of comments. And one thing that was on his mind, though, was a conversation he had with somebody in the community where he lives, and that's in Port Credit, in Mississauga. And he said, a friend of his said he won't be selling puppies again after this year because, he said, nobody wants to buy them. That's what a friend said. Don Cherry then says, yes, you hardly see any puppies in Mississauga, and you see almost none at all in Toronto. And then he went into, you people come to this kind of country for its milk and honey, and its benefits and peace and all that, you ought to be prepared to spend a few bucks to buy a poppy to support the men who fought to preserve those rights or goodies that you enjoy. The interesting thing was, that's the first period. That's the intermission. Between the second and third period, nobody said anything to Don. Nobody said to Don, maybe you want to phrase that a little differently, or just sort of clarify. Program ends. He's around the studio for probably another hour. nobody comes up to him, not the crew, not the bosses, nobody comes to him and says, Don, my God, you know what you said? Well, not sure he said anything wrong. His co-host, McLean, he with the knife in the back, he must be a real comedian. he didn't hear anything wrong. It's not until the next day when some agitators get on Twitter and start racism, Don Cherry attacked immigrants, and so on. Don Cherry, if you follow the conversation, was just basically saying people should support the poverty campaign. But he did single out indirectly immigrants. I'll tell you why. Mississauga, I know this because I ran for mayor there twice. There were times where I actually thought I was running in the suburb of Detroit. I didn't realize how that community had changed. Mississauga is over 50% non-white. See, Toronto is over 50% non-white. What Sherry noticed was many of the people who are non-white didn't wear a poppy. In fact, some, of course, do wear poppies. You have to understand this in the context. He's paid to be opinionated. And opinionated isn't the same thing as an academic paper where the professor says, well, there's this evidence on this side, but also this counter evidence here. This isn't an academic paper. This is a commentary where you're paid to be what? Like, you know, he'll say, anybody who doesn't want to fight in hockey's a wimp, or ask your words. That's what he's paid for. He's not the final word on anything. He's just an opinion. Anyway, all hell broke loose. And you might have thought, considering his long history and his tremendous contribution to the game, to the program, to the vets. And he's been a long-time supporter of veterans. And you would have thought there would be tremendous support for it. Well, there was. But this is where we see the cowardice and the lack of belief in free speech in many important and powerful parts of our society. So that they all hell broke loose on Sunday. By Monday noon, the report came out over the TV that Don Cherry had been fired by Rogers. Which owns Sportsnet, which produces Hockey Night in Canada, which owns Hockey Night in Canada. So Rogers, a near monopoly, mega corporation, gets rid of Don Cherry, and they said something to the effect that his comments were divisive. That sounds like a criticism. Having said something is divisive, you haven't said anything at all. If you take a strong opinion on anything, somebody will disagree. Well, that's divisive. How can we not be divisive tonight? Well, I have to find out something that everybody here agrees on completely. Let's talk about religion. Well, that'd be divisive. So this person might believe one thing, this person may be an Orthodox, this person may be an atheist, this person may be a Buddhist, this person may be a pagan, this person may be a born-again Christian. I mean, almost any comment is going to be divisive. How can I say anything that we could all agree on? Well, let's have a big group hug. And so I said, don't touch me. Okay, that's divisive. It sounds like an important comment. It isn't. And John Cherry was paid to be opinionated, which means people will say he's a jerk. Fair enough. That's what draws an audience. Anyway, so he was. They canned him after 37 years. One comment that may have offended some people, and there were immigrants. I heard immigrants on TV, on radio in Toronto that said, "I didn't take offense. I wear a poppy. He wasn't talking about me." So it wasn't as if every single immigrant or every single non-white immigrant was wounded to the core. Okay, so he's fired. Then the NHL, don't forget, he has brought them a tremendous amount of money because most of the professional sports teams make much of their money from the TV rights. high ratings, you charge the advertisers more to advertise, and that means more money. Don Cherry was worth the money they paid him. What's the NHL saying? He worked for them for 37 years. They say Don Cherry's comments do not reflect the values of the NHL, which are for diversity and inclusion. I thought, the moron who wrote that, did he, she, or it, because we have to be gender balanced here, he, she, or it, even look at what the words meant. The NHL has values of diversity and inclusion, but they don't include Don Cherry, and they don't include the diverse opinion Don Cherry brings. We're dealing with it in a society of insanity. And then, the final blow, and that's so Canadian. Wait till the guy is down, then put the boots to him. You wouldn't face him man to man. You just wait till he's down, put the boots to him, plunge the knife into him. The Legion. Now, the leadership of the Legion are among the most pathetic scumbags in this country. I don't usually toss that word around lightly. Real scumbags. What do they say? We disassociate ourselves completely from the views of Don Cherry. Don Cherry does not represent the values of the Legion. I thought Don Cherry could have pushed any charity he wanted. He could have pushed saving the whales, or improving the life of the polar bears, or helping the refugees in Timbuktu. But he repeatedly championed the soldiers, especially the wounded soldiers in the Canadian Armed Forces. He put himself out. He didn't have to do that. He wasn't paid to promote the Legion. And what does that leadership do for a man who has directed a lot of money and reminded people maybe of their duty and their obligation? They stab him in the back. I thought, you know, apparently Cherry did get an offer from Moscow Dynamo, which is the hockey team, well, the major hockey team in Moscow, to do some sort of broadcast. Seriously, you know, to hell with this country. I'll broadcast for Russia. You know, I don't have no idea what he'll do, but there's been tremendous pushback, and with a lot of to credit to a lot of people. The last I saw, that about 250,000 people had signed an online petition. And that meant it was more than just clicking, it's more than just liking. You had to put your name, I think you had to put your address, and so on. So it was a certain commitment. But people are angry. And the cafe and other groups in Toronto had protests outside of Rogers' headquarters. I think we've got some more plans for further down the line. But somehow, these people have to be made to suffer for what they've done. Not just John Cherry, that is the challenge we face in the free speech movement. We have not developed good tools to make the people who take away people's rights to free speech, make them suffer. Now, they can make people suffer, like Motel makes me suffer, Rogers makes Don Cherry suffer. But while I'm on the topic of the Legion, I truly detest the leadership. I want to make a distinction between the men and women who are members of the Legion and the people that run it. Did you know that Ezra Levant and Rebel Media are a hate group? That's right, Ezra, Jewish, Zionist. He's a hater. Well, I've known Ezra on and off since he was a law student. And Ezra Levant has defended free speech pretty consistently. I quibble, maybe he's not 100% free speech like all of us, and the late Doug Christie, but he's done a pretty good job. And Rebel Media has attacked a lot of good things. They've done a lot of exposés on the illegal immigration and various other things along the way. It would be pretty hard, though, to, in the real world, say that Ezra Levant is a hate, is a hate monger, or the Rebel Media is a hate group. I mean, what would hate mean? Well, Ezra, about 3 weeks ago, launched his book called The Libranos, you know, based on the Sopranos, the gangsters. It's about the liberals. He launched it at a Legion 66. Now, I didn't say 66, it's 66. 66 branch in North Toronto. And there was already some controversy. They wanted, there were forces that said, you can't allow Ezra Levant to launch his book there. And then these were people within the Legion, sorry, within the leadership. Anyway, the Branch 666 allowed the book launch to go ahead, and then all hell broke loose. The provincial command denounced that branch and said they were wrong to let Ezra Levant launch his book there because rebel media is a hate group. That's what they said, a hate group. And a couple months ago, the Dominion Command, that's the headquarters in Ottawa, brought out a new pulse. The no branch is to affiliate, whatever that means, with any group or people that are hate groups or that promote hate on the basis of race, religion, sex, sexual orientation, and some sort of other thing, affiliation, I think. It is so vague. And oh yes, well, okay, who decides this? Dominion Command will decide who's a hate group. Of course, without a trial or a hearing. And so, you know, the very sort of tactics that my parents' generation, if you ask them, well, why did you volunteer in World War II, would have said, well, we're, and I've asked old vets, not anymore, there are hardly any, punching none left, but well, why did you go to war? Some didn't have particularly saleable reasons, they're understandable, but maybe not all as saleable. People, some said, well, to get away from the old lady. Others said, well, it was after 10 years of a depression, at least I could know, I knew I would get 3 meals a day and clothes. But many others who had, you know, some degree of comfort joined for idealistic reasons. And from what people could explain to me, it was somewhat something like, well, we thought we were fighting for a freer world. As summarized, maybe in that Vera Lynn song, We'll Meet Again, and we will meet again, don't know where, don't know when, and we'll meet again someday when the world is free. And that, in a sense, probably summarized what my parents' generation thought they were fighting for. Now, of course, you and I both know that in two world wars, this was wrong. Now, not that the people were wrong, the people joined for idealistic reasons. Those were two colossal genocidal, fratricidal wars, and certainly the Second War was fought for somebody else's goals, not ours. But be that as it may, the people who usually join for idealistic reasons. So they were fighting for freedom. The organization that represents them now represents totalitarian repression. You're a hate group. I mean, Ezra Levant never got a chance to say, well, actually, I'm not a hate group, and this is why I'm, did you know I'm Jewish, how could I be a hater? Or any of this stuff. No, he's gone. Well, he would be gone. He wouldn't be, I know he wouldn't be able to run another Legion. But he's not the first victim. Several, what you might call right-wing or nationalist groups have been booted out of Legions. There's one group down in Nova Scotia. They rented a Legion to present their anti-immigration platform. The local Antifa complained. And what did the Legion management do? Did they say, we fought in a war for freedom and rights. They've got a right to have their meeting. You've got a right to stand outside and wave your signs of protest if you like. No. The local leadership collapsed like a house of cards, and that group was out on the street. Well, of course, the story you all heard is what happened to Monica Schaefer. You see, in a big city like Toronto, okay, if they did cancel Ezra out of the Legion, there are other places. In a small town, often the Legion is the center of social activity. As you know, Monica Schaefer was quite a gifted musician, a fiddle player, a violinist. These are fighting words at some quarters. A bit, well, being a country western fan, I'll say she's a fiddler. But, as you know, she was a member of several musical groups, and they played at the Legion. Well, the president of the local Legion she couldn't come in for anything. And she actually tried on several occasions, and they called the police. No, they'll put you out. I thought, What did the, I mean, the president of the Legion in Jasper, Alberta, he didn't fight in World War II. But what did he think those people who did fight fought for? To ban a woman from the Legion? I thought that's the sort of stuff they did in totalitarian countries, you know. Anyway, she was banned. Ban was never lifted. And then, of course, the president of that Legion went even further. He complained to the Alberta Human Rights Commission, the Canadian Human Rights Commission, the RCMP, and the German embassy, God knows why, because she was born in Canada, she's not a German citizen, trying to get her charged or punished. I thought, what are those values? You see what I mean about it? It's not just the street scum that are a problem. There are people in important positions of power who don't get free speech. And I would be curious to hear what the man would have said if he'd been asked, well, didn't the veterans, among other things, fight for freedom of speech, for rights like that, even for Monica? Would he have said, you're a Nazi? Maybe that's the quickest response, just insult you. So the Legion is a terrible, terrible letdown. I don't want the story to digress down the things, but the leadership of the Legion has been a big problem for a long, long time. Here's another story about, not exactly about the Legion, but about the poppy. There's a girl up in northwest Manitoba, near Churchill, 17-year-old high school girl, and her friend. And they're part of the school choir, I think, yeah. Okay, do something musical. And the teacher said that for Remembrance Day, wouldn't it be nice if we all wore rainbow poppies? In case that doesn't ring a bell, it has nothing to do with the Bible or the story of Noah. It has everything to do with LGBTQ and the long list of other symbols and numbers and so on, the sexually bizarre. Okay, so let's honor the sexually bizarre. Well, what does that have to do with Remembrance Day? Anyway, with more sense than her teacher, the 17-year-old girl, who is, according to press reports, part, they say Afro-Canadian, I think that means Negro, and part of Native Indian, says, no, I want to wear the traditional black and red poppy, red and black poppy. Two of my family have, you know, were in the army, in the war, served in the army, and this would honor them. I want to do the traditional thing. And her friend agreed with it. Okay, so far, so good. Well then, because I think she was getting some pressure and some hassle, the girl did a poster where she explains, and I've read the poster. And it's, and I know it's a high school student, it's full of misconduct, but that's okay. She says basically that this is the red and black poppy is the traditional symbol. She wants to stick with the tradition. She mentions that two of her family had served in the armed forces, and she said the LGBTQ crowd get a whole month, you know, Gay Pride Month. The veterans who've actually done something for this country get one day a year. Why don't we just honor that? Well, those are pretty mature sentiments from a 17-year-old. You'd think she'd get a pat on the back. Good on you there, you know. It's good for you to take a stand. No, get out of here! She is suspended for, it looks like, about 5 days. She's suspended because she was involved in, get this, hate speech. Now, what I just summarized to you, and she didn't use any bad language or anything like that, was hate speech. It's hate speech to say, I want to wear the traditional poppy, and those people who are promoting this sexual agenda, you've got a whole month to, you know, to celebrate, you know, where you like to stick it, can we have one day for the people who actually did something for this country? She's suspended. Oh yes, and further, she's trying to record this on her cell phone. I tell you, some of these teenagers are more technologically advanced than I am. But anyway, says they seize her cell phone. inmates and send her home and tell her, don't you put any of this on the social media, go to the press. Whether she did or didn't, it's hard to know, because the story came actually through her cousin, who ran for the Conservative Party in that part of Manitoba in the last federal election. We talked about what's happening to her young cousin, a 17-year-old. Then it got, was all over the media. So our cafe sent a sternly worded letter to the principal, Thady, of the school, which took some doing. I called the school, I couldn't find the principal's email, so I called the school at 2 o'clock on a Friday afternoon. As far as I know in Manitoba, schools are open at 2 on a Friday afternoon. Ring, 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 ring. No one picks up the phone. I'd like a secretarial job like that. Just flip the phone free and go home. But they're completely hiding in the... you know, there's egg all over their face, and rightly so. And this is what I'm trying to put out to the principal. What have you taught that young lady? You've taught her the freedom of speech that she may have thought her relatives fought for. That doesn't exist in this country. If you don't kowtow to political correctness, in other words, oh, I think that's a wonderful thing, I'm going to wear this rainbow poppy. If you open your mouth, you get punished. That's quite a lesson. Wasn't that the system we were told we were fighting against? Anyway, I also said, basically, how dare you? Oh, yeah, I got that from that other 16-year-old. How dare you? How dare you? You're probably a job. Well, I didn't say you're probably a phys ed teacher, but who knows? What background do you have in law? You're saying that's hate speech. Technically speaking, it's not hate speech until, number one, you've been charged under Section 319. Number two, you've had a trial. Number three, you've been convicted. Only then can I legitimately say that's hate speech. A court said so. Some high school principal has an idea that it's controversial, so I'll give a good slap down. That's hate speech. It's kind of frightening because people have an idea that, well, promoting hate is somehow against the law. So you're telling a 17, you're scaring her, among other things. You're scaring her. There's something, she hasn't done anything wrong. You may not agree with her opinion, although God knows why you wouldn't agree with her opinion. But that's bullying. I thought the schools were supposed to be against bullying, too. Anyway, all of this cumulatively shows large sentiments of our society that unfortunately just don't get it about free speech. Well, then it becomes what's happened to the People's Party of Canada in the last election. there were a number of efforts, both by the street scum and the, let's say, the, I hate to say, the street scum as opposed to the corporate scum, because they're not necessarily corporate, but let's say the low town and the uptown types. Okay, the low town types tried to stop Maxime Bernier's meeting here in Vancouver at the Greek Cultural Center, and the local group, the Workers' Communist Party, or something. Well, that gang outside of the Greek Cultural Center, none of them looked so they ever worked a day of their lives, but I guess they can imagine. That didn't work. They didn't knuckle under to that pressure, although other people's meetings have been canceled because of threats. Stephen Ball and News meeting earlier this year was. Over in my part of the country, Maxime Bernier was going to speak at Mohawk College, which is a community college in Hamilton. The uptown scum and the street level scum combined. The uptown haters of free speech in a group called the Canadian Anti-Hate Network. When you hear the word anti-hate, you know you're hearing anti-white and anti-free speech. By the way, his name was Evan Dalgord, and he wrote a piece in the Hamilton Spectator urging Mohawk College to cancel the meeting because, it would be divisive. That's what elections are all about. And various other things. Mohawk College They said, well, they couldn't cancel the meeting because the provincial government, to Doug Ford's credit, had brought in legislation that if colleges and universities do not protect freedom of speech on campus, they will lose funding. Now, the sad thing is that the government should have to tell academics that they should defend free speech. As we know, in campuses right across this country, free speech is a very rare commodity. So, okay, well, there's nothing we can do. The government made us do it. But they still thought they had a way around it. Maxine Bernier was being interviewed by some Jewish talk show host. So the college said, okay, well, it has to be extra security. So they wanted to, I think, charge 10 times more. I believe the figure was $5,000. The Jewish talk show host said, I'll pay it. Marvel. Failed to stop the meeting. But again, how outrageous this is. It's up to the responsibility is, first of all, the college has to maintain order. They have campus security. If they think that's going to be beyond them, what should they do? I don't call the Hamilton police. Yeah, because we could get them off, revenuing. You know, they sit there on the Lincoln Parkway writing tickets. Totally useless motorist harassment. Get them to do a real job and provide security. And that we already paid for that through taxes, so there shouldn't be any extra charge to the group. Okay, the meeting goes ahead. Well, it's about to go ahead, and about the press reports about 100 anti-vax showed up. Of course, masks. They are bravely standing behind their opinions in their masks. And there's fortunately, and one of those video moments that went viral. Three psychos, Antifa, are standing in front of this 81-year-old lady, painfully moving toward the entrance of Mohawk College with her walker and her husband by her side. One big galoot puts his boot in the way of the walker. Standing there grinning, Clay, is a masked she-male who is screaming about Nazis cannot pass, screaming Nazi at this 81-year-old woman, who you'll find out subsequently, her family, she's Canadian born and bred, her family had people fighting World War II on the Canadian side. So this screaming about Nazis had nothing to do with the real world. This crazy woman didn't know the old lady from a hole in the ground. So she's screaming hysterically, Nazi, 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 and the big galoot, it turns, or no, the one in the red t-shirt turns out to be one of Trudeau's Syrians. Came here in 2016, and his family owns a restaurant in Toronto. I'll get back to that in a moment. Fortunately, that video did go viral. Subsequently, the three of them have been arrested, and one other person. So the street scum didn't manage to stop the meeting. The Syrian's interesting. His family, once, of course, he was outing, and his name was out there on the internet, the family which runs a restaurant in Queen Street West in Toronto, put out a statement that he meant well. They apologized for his actions, but he meant well because he'd been fighting for the not the underprivileged, but the marginalized. You'd be fighting for marginalized. Where were the marginalized? He came all the way from Toronto to Hamilton, as did the other three people who were arrested. Now this was organized disruption. So then it turns out that the same Syrian had been harassing one of Faith Goldie's rallies some months back. As often happens with the anti-racists, they love to play, it's so dangerous being an anti-racist, I'm a victim. Now the family, this Syrian family that owns the restaurant, then put it out that they were receiving all sorts of hate mail and hate calls. And well, they were frightened. Now wait a sec. You came from Syria when bombs go off and all sorts of horrible things happen. Supposing it's true, somebody wrote you a few nasty emails. Hey, you deserve it. You brought up, you didn't bring up Sandra, well, didn't you? Now, not very grateful. You're in our country by the grace of God, well, actually, no, the grace of Justin Trudeau. And this is the way you pay us back? You have the gall to try to stand in the way of an 81-year-old woman going about her business? Not even like a Greta Thunberg saying, how dare you? I don't agree with sending people, you know, if it was harassment. And I tend to doubt it. I mean, it's easy to say, oh, we got all these emails, we're so frightened. So, okay, they were so frightened. You begin to learn a little bit more about them. They're called Sufis. I think they're the Sufis. So the Sufis, actually, it didn't come from Syria exactly. They were in the Gulf States. And they came to Canada, Syrians. And they had fairly little money. They'd run some sort of business in the Gulf States. That's why they could come to Canada and open a restaurant. And, of course, the press is playing the old fiddle and the violin there. Oh, you know, they worked so hard, they're contributing Canadians. Well, actually, they're contributing Syrians. But the harassment supposedly is so bad, they're giving up the restaurant. So that, this is a real boo-hoo-hoo moment. I believe Justin Trudeau showed up and various other people showed up in solidarity. Nobody showed up in solidarity for the old lady. But a couple of days later, you know, just as the soap opera is going in one direction, goes in another direction. A rich Muslim from Mississauga, who runs a couple of grocery stores, steps in and he's going to provide management services. What does it mean? I mean, the Sufis know how to manage a restaurant. Does this guy have to come in? I mean, it's all bullshit. Anyway, the restaurant reopens. The racist didn't win. There's more to the story. I'm not sure I know all of the lore, but I mean, the story is a crock. But the way to deflect criticism is to say, oh, we're the martyrs, and we're anti-racist, and look at all these bad calls, and so on. I would say most of that is probably just complete nonsense. So, okay, that meeting went ahead. So, ironically, though, it probably worked out because the people who put up the $60,000 will get almost all of that. They can't pay the rent, the billboard space that they were given, so that around those, they probably are out the money to produce the posters. I've done that. Times gone by. Oh yes, Patterson, one of my favorite companies. When I ran against Jason Kenney in Calgary Southeast, which was one of my less successful adventures, I thought I might actually make immigration an issue, but I didn't realize I was running in Cuba. There, in the election of 2011 in Calgary Southeast, there were no all candidates meetings. I was talking to the Green Party candidate, the Liberal Party candidate, and the NDP candidate. Are there no meetings? No. No, that's not how they do things here. It's like a one-party state. Sure, you can put your name on the ballot, but there won't be any meetings. And in fact, it was almost impossible to get any publicity. I did put out an election card, and we got thousands of them distributed, but it was, you know, pretty much like running in Cuba. Patterson Outdoor Advertising, I thought, I'll do here what I did the year before when I ran for mayor of Mississauga the first time. I hope you get some billboard advertising. I got ads on the buses. And I want to do the same thing in Calgary Southeast. My message was relatively mild about immigration. It wasn't quite as strong as the billboard. No, I'm not selling it to you. Well, they're the only show in town. They have 59% of the Canadian billboard market corner. They won't deal with you. Well, in some parts of the country, the only place you could get a billboard would be on Indian Reservation, and they'll probably sell you the space. But it is unbelievable. And I thought, you thrived because of economic freedom, and yet your company has no commitment to freedom at all. You know, you people, the unionists, don't deserve it. The People's Party of Canada's party problems were just beginning. It turned out, a couple days before the election, that a fellow named Warren Kinsella had been hired. And does everybody here know who Warren Kinsella is? Well, you're okay, but you're probably fortunate not to know that. Warren Kinsella, he has been he's a professional anti-racist. He was a big wheel in John Chrétien's Liberal Party. He was a backroom boy. And he was, or at least he claimed he was largely responsible for Chrétien's 1993 campaign, whereas, you know, in 93, Chrétien demolished the Liberal Party. And probably not because of Kinsella's brilliance. Mulroney had been quite smart, knowing after 9 years, people were fed up with him. He'd become known as Lion Brian. And he decided he'd retire. And he gave it over to Kim Campbell, who thought, she'll be Canada's first female prime minister. Yay for Kim. Well, it was not to be. Kim Campbell campaigned so brilliantly she managed to lose every single seat in the Conservative Party, including her own ample backside seat, except for two. Now, Kinsella was a backroom boy. In fact, he called himself the Prince of Darkness. He dreamed up all sorts of dirty tricks. Frankly, I don't think Chrétien needed dirty tricks to be Kim Campbell, but be that as it may. And then in those days, Kinsella was getting starting to be known as an anti-racist, and he put out a book that I would give to you. I wouldn't sell it to you because I don't believe in selling mental pornography, but it's called Web of Hate, Inside Canada's Far-Right Network. We in the movement called it Web of Shit. Kinsella prides himself as a researcher. Well, the expert in the day about the then Heritage Front, a fellow by the name of Bill Dunphy, who wrote for the Toronto Sun, regrettably had the inside track because Wolfgang Drum, the head of the Heritage Front, would talk to Dunphy every day, even though Dunphy also asked to stop. Anyway, Dunphy found 37 errors of fact in one chapter alone. That was the one on the Heritage Front, about which Dunphy knew a fair deal. Anyway, Kinsella made quite a name for himself in the book, and has since then become something of a known racist, an expert on anti-racism. But even then, Kinsella was what I like to call a drama queen. And when he was promoting the book, he spoke to a Jewish group in 1994, but this was reported in the Toronto Star, and Kinsella said, well, when my wife and I, that was his wife at the time, he since has a new one, but when my wife and I check into a hotel, we check in under assumed names. And the reason was because he felt he was being pursued by hitmen for Muammar Gaddafi, because he'd written a previous book about the Libyan connection between Canada's far right and Muammar Gaddafi. Now, I swear to God, I never received a cent from Muammar Gaddafi. Anyway, so the hitmen for Muammar Gaddafi were after him, and so were neo-Nazi skinheads. Aha. Now remember, that's 1994. Let me think, 95, 96, 97. 25 years later, these hitmen for Muammar Gaddafi and the neo-Nazi skinhead hitmen, who are now probably real skinheads because they're all bald, never finally managed to find them. It's all, of course, all total bullshit. But so this is part of the act. You know, being an anti-racist is so dangerous. You know, I mean, hitmen are following you. Some people would say, I think you've got mental problems. Maybe you should, that might be a case of paranoia here. Anyway, so that's good. So Kinsella over the years has done a lot of nasty things. He was one of the major forces trying to get Bill Warren U shut down in court. He admitted that he would like to see Dr. Sears forced into bankruptcy, anything that to destroy the paper. That's my definition of fanatic. Anyway, it turns out, though, that he had been hired to do a dirty tricks campaign against the People's Party of Canada. He'd been hired by the name Brett. Nope. Center for Israel and Jewish Affairs. Nope. The street anti-fall, you know, they could, if they sold the crack pipes, they could come up with $25. Mm. The Conservative Party! The Conservative Party paid this really disgusting individual to work on a dirty tricks project against the People's Party. And the goal was to set up a phony group on the internet to bombard out messages accusing the People's Party of being racist and the usual stuff, with the hope of keeping Maxime Bernier out of the leaders' debate. Talk about low down, no commitment to democracy. The commitment to democracy would mean that we want to hear all the leaders. Let's see the whole spectrum and see what they've got, what they have to offer us. The Conservative Party was involved in funding this former Liberal Party hack to do a dirty on Maxime Bernier. And I don't think he ever looked so little and cheap as the weekend before the election when Andrew Scheer was being questioned by the media, did you hire Warren Kinsella? And he would repeat it like a robot. It is not our policy to comment on who does or does not supply to the Conservative Party. But it's actually a question, it's simple. If it's no, say no. We can't say no. So he repeats this meaningless, we don't comment on who does dirty tricks for us. Then Kinsella, as I say, drama queen. Kinsella is now cornered. He looked pretty grim. And he's kind of defiant. He says, it's never wrong to fight racism. That's a needle at the Maxime Bernier. It's never wrong to fight racism. Well, did the Conservative Party hire you? Well, I can't comment. But even, he looked pretty cheap. Well, then he said, no, I'm not feeling well. No, he says, I'm sick. And I was wondering, I didn't use this, your description of your mental state. No, and he didn't say, I'm sick and tired. He said, I'm sick. I don't